Hi, Blue Wire listeners. I'm Greg Olson. I'm excited to partner with Blue Wire to bring you TE1, a podcast where I interview the tight ends who have revolutionized the position. Listen in as I have raw, in-depth conversations with the all-time greats like Shannon Sharp, Tony Gonzalez, Travis Kelce, and George Kittle. We'll explore how the tight end position has changed over the last 60 years and what it takes to be the very best. Subscribe to TE1 from Blue Wire Studios today so you're ready for the August premiere.
What's up, everybody, and welcome in to the Prediction Esports Backliners podcast. Agro joined by Barracuda, as per usual. Barra, It was an interesting week of SPL this week.
Yeah.
Some ups and downs.
Yeah, I'll just go into mine.
Sure, man.
We should have won.
Yeah, you definitely had a good shot.
I am so mad about our set because I'm pretty sure we should have 2-0'd. Like, because of how our team is playing in scrims versus, or how much better we've gotten in scrims versus how it did not translate this week in SPL. Me and Vin were, I don't know, full tilt, like rage. I don't know, like, how the best way to put it is. Well, like, so game one.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Game one, they drafted the full, like, early game comp.
Mm-hmm.
And we drafted a little bit more late game, but we stalled it out so well. We got first blood in solo, mm-hmm. when we got kills in duo at the exact same time. Mm-hmm. And then they got gold for free.
Uh-huh.
Don't know why. And then while they were doing gold, I saw Haim cross the ward, and I was like, we should go to Pyro. Well, we went to Pyro 20 seconds after they got gold, and we lost Pyro. Still, 1,000 gold down. Still a completely winnable game.
Mm-hmm.
And then, for some reason, we dive so hard into an Olerun ult and lose the team fight.
Yeah, Olerun ult, pretty good, it turns out.
Yeah.
That was pretty good. You brought up an interesting, one of the things that you said there made me come up with a question. Cause I was watching today, the second set, and Obey was up like 3,000-4,000 gold at 29 minutes. And someone in chat said, why are the casters still talking about a gold lead? Gold doesn't matter at like 29-30 minutes, and gold difference does vary in terms of importance as the game goes later. But for you guys, like when you're playing, are there benchmarks that it's like, oh man, if we're down 1,000 gold at 2 minutes, like what the hell is going on here? Or like, you know, what are some of those things that are notable to you or where you think this is still winnable if it's this amount of gold at 10 minutes or it's not winnable at that amount? You know what I mean?
I would say that depends on our comp. Given the example of our game one comp, where we drafted so much more late game than they did, being down 1,000 gold to 2,000 gold at 10 minutes does not matter. Like, mentally for me, I'm completely satisfied, and we just drag that out. But if it's, I would say if it's about a 5,000 gold lead and you have a late game comp versus an early game comp and it's 10 minutes, you need to start making plays. You need to start doing something on the map.
Right.
If it's 5,000 gold lead at 20 minutes, that's playable, but it's still in that risky territory. Again, late game comp versus early game comp. At 30 minutes, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like, at that lead, I mean, it is something to talk about on the cast, but as a player mentally, you're not affected by it one bit.
Sure. So at 30 minutes, 10K is obviously like you've been getting blown out all game.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Is there a lead sub 10K that worries you at 30 minutes?
I would say probably 7 to 8, depending on team comps.
Sure.
If we're late game and they're still early game at 30 minutes and we're down 7-8K, I'm still happy. Like, okay, we're still in a winning position. And if we play the team fights correctly, we should win. Also, experience comes into play, but that's a whole nother talk because I don't know the exact numbers or like the exact levels that I would feel comfortable like saying out loud.
Sure.
But as far as gold goes, my mental, I'm kind of like always, unless it's like, if it's early game versus early game, and if it's one of those like scrim games that happens to be streamed on SPL, you know what I'm talking about? Or like, yes.
Like where you four man group at the red buff, the first red buff respawn, and the ADC gets a triple kill, like that kind of like that kind of game.
You're just going next on that one, dude. Yeah. Bro, I got so emotionally invested into that Obey set today. When they lost, it hurt me more than my own loss.
Yeah, those were tough because they were winning both games.
Yeah.
Sino's post-set tweet was fantastic. Like, the I can't believe we lost both those games. Like, I'm with them, dude. Because it's not like they had drafted early game. Their draft was really good. Late game. They really didn't have a whole lot of business winning early game. Not that SSG's comp was bad late game, but I don't think it necessarily matched. But they it turns out they lost both those games, which was disappointing for sure.
It was just individual mistakes, team mistakes, and objective mistakes. Both games, and when you're making that many mistakes, you can't win.
Yeah.
And like, I think it was game one where Wowie took like an elongated like 1v2, tried to kill Cherry. Oh yeah, because Cherry was Najee, yeah. And then Wowie ends up dying for it. And then Inbound drops the body block on Vote. And then Vote goes into the purple buff. Inbound pushes him as Kuzimbo. And then Sino blinks, misses his stun because he got pushed by Inbound.
That was so awkward, yep.
And it was like, three mistakes in a row when you have like a 3,000 gold lead, 2.5, 3,000, whatever it was.
Yep.
And then after that fight, it was like a completely even game. I'm like,
I know.
If one of those things did not happen, Sino is in a completely better spot coming into that team fight. And wow, he's probably still alive for that team fight. Like, dude.
Brutal. I know. It was brutal. Sam brings up a good question. I did want to get to this. I don't know if you saw Dolson on the desk. Both Mifflin and Dolson were doing a bit. Mifflin was wearing his Obey jersey, you know, used to play under Obey Alliance, loves rooting for them. And, you know, he was trying to put all his energy behind them. And he goes, well, what could possibly go wrong? How could it get worse for Obey? You know, they're only going up from here. And Dave goes, well, they could remove one team from the SPL and they would get relegated. Look, here's my opinion on this. And this is truly my opinion. Okay. Mm-hmm. What both of them are doing is not technically acceptable on a broadcast, right? Like Mifflin is being clearly biased for Obey. Mm-hmm. And I think Dave does the right thing of whenever you're it's like an improv strategy, whenever you're co-actor or whatever you want to say, the person you're improvising with is going one way, you go hard the other in order to bring balance to the bit. And that's all Dave did. Mm-hmm. What is what Dave said in a vacuum good to say on broadcast? Of course not. But neither is what Mifflin is saying on broadcast, but no one's going to criticize him for that because it's positive, you know? So I think I understand that in a vacuum, it was an unacceptable thing to say, but I think in context, I thought it was perfectly fine. I don't know. You can talk from a more player perspective. Mine's a big, you know, I'm biased for the casters, of course, but that's the way I view it, at least.
I mean, as a player, if I was on Obey, I would be tilted. But as a player not on Obey, it looks like a lighthearted joke because Mifflin's saying, like, there's nowhere else to go but up. And then Dolson's like, well, you know, like, so from the outside for me as a player, it looks like a joke. But if I was on Obey, I'd be like, hey, man, that's not funny. Like, we're literally like trying our hardest right now. And like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and in fairness to Dave, he spent the entire other part of the death segment saying what they've been doing better and highlighting the good parts. So I don't think that it's fair to think that that's even Dave's actual opinion. You know, I think that it's a little bit you can make the argument on whether or not that bit should ever be happening in the first place. But overall, I think it's very clear that Dave doesn't actually think that. So I think saying otherwise is a little bit disingenuous in my mind.
But, and I also made the exact same joke on my stream.
Well, there you go. Wow, Barra, how come no one clipped you, man? How come no one? Come on.
I mean, technically, my team was dropped last year. So, I mean, I'm just coming from a place of experience.
Yes.
Like, yeah. I know what that feels like.
Fair enough. A lot of people in chat saying it's not on the official broadcast. You're all right. But I think part of Hi-Rez's identity from day one has been that we don't take ourselves too seriously. I think the last few years we tried to get really deep into that serious aspect and the community didn't like it as much. It didn't feel as genuine from us. I think that's what the majority of our fans want. So, I think that it did not cross a line for me, but that's, you know, it's an opinion piece. So that's the way it is.
My final opinion is, I think it was a lighthearted joke, but Obey as players should and can be offended, but sure. I don't think anything more will come from it.
I don't think there's a whole lot of value in people being offended for Obey is the way I'll say it. Mm-hmm. Like six people, you know, seven for Shook, they deserve to be a little bit upset and everyone else can have a laugh. That's kind of the way it goes. Also, a really good way to avoid being made jokes of in the future is to win your games.
God, I knew you were going to say that.
Stop me when I'm wrong.
Sometimes it's too hard, aggro. Sometimes you double script for a whole year. You come to LAN every week and you lose. So, you know, sometimes it's too hard.
Hey, man, you're trying your best. And that's all we can ever ask, you know? That's all we can ever ask, for sure.
Sports are coming back, and so are your chances to bet on your favorite teams and events. Major League Baseball is finally kicking off this week, and there's no better place to start wagering than our exclusive partners, BetOnline. Check out all the odds, futures, and props to bet on, all available 24/7. And with the return of sports, BetOnline sat down with former pro players Eddie George, Harold Reynolds, and seven-time NBA champ Robert Horry. See what they had to say on what it'll be like playing without fans in a series they're calling Fandemic. Visit betonline.ag for all your odds and up-to-date sports news. Remember to use promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your new welcome bonus. That's promo code BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online wagering experts. Have you ever heard of DealDash.com? It's the best, most honest bidding site where you can win things you'd never expect at a price you'd never believe. They have over 1,000 auctions every day on electronics, appliances, beauty products, home decor, and even cars. Here's how it works. It's like an auction, but every item starts at $0 and only goes up 1 cent every time you bid. The kicker is that the auction clock restarts after just 10 seconds. That means every time you bid, everyone else has 10 seconds to answer or the item is yours. If you go ahead and buy now, DealDash is offering our listeners an extra 100 free bids upon sign up on top of their other discounts. Go to DealDash.com and use the offer code PREDICTION. Or deal-.fm/prediction. That's DealDash.com/PREDICTION. And now let's get back to the podcast.
I want to touch on what Spellguest asks in the chat. What went wrong for United this week, man? Because they looked better after week one. I thought they looked pretty good after week one, all things considered. Week two was not as kind for them. I had to do the same thing. Mackenzie has a little thing that she keeps itching at, and I have to. So apologies if I have to stop her.
She brought the hair tie and she's yelling at me.
Oh, she's pumped.
Oh God, it's not going to stop. I'll just ignore her. I think their dual lane did not play well.
Agreed.
I think Guy J on the Frey game looked lost in team fights. And I think Paul had like a stellar performance. I was roasting him on my stream or my viewing of the games because I was saying he wasn't a Mori player and I liked him a lot more than everything else, but he proved me wrong very quickly at like 8 to 10 minutes.
That was his best Morrigan game and it wasn't close. He has never had a Morrigan game even half as good in his whole life, and I was on your side and I'm now on your side that it's okay now. You know, that's the way it goes.
Agreed. I don't know if it was him or his team or like a combination of both where they just started. They're just popping off. And then game two, I just remember what Gaijo was playing. I remember he was Uller. Oh, yeah, they were Uller Herclean. And they got ganked once, and then got ganked while invading their purple, and then got ganked again in lane. And then from there on,
the game is over.
Coffins.
Yeah, the game is literally over. I was casting that set, and as soon as that lane falls behind, your game is over. Like,
yep.
If you lose with Hercules Uller, the laning phase, you can move on. And that's just kind of how that lane goes. Lumen in chat says Snoopy isn't really settling in too well. He didn't look better this week. I agree and I disagree, because I thought mechanically he looked way better this week. I think that, like, even in that Hercules game, he was landing everything. It was just he was in the wrong spot a couple times and they got punished for it really hard. But overall, I don't think that it was an irredeemable week for Snoopy. I think Scream looked really lost. And I think Guy J looked really lost. I think Snoopy just looked inexperienced more than anything else in my mind.
Variety looked like he was playing a rain game.
Yeah, that was a tough one, game two, huh? Like that.
Oh, I think you actually talked about that.
Yeah.
On the cast.
Yeah, it's one of those ranked games, dude, where you're chilling in solo. You solo your lane opponent. You're feeling really good. You press tab and you're like, what is happening in this game? Like, what? That's the one where you tweet about how you're taking a break from ranked after that. You know, like, that's that kind of game. So you feel for him there for sure. You got a game like that that you can remember, Barra, where you it felt like one of those ranked games?
Well, I mean, game three this weekend felt like that. Well, I was like, also, game three I'm not mad about. All right, we messed up our draft. We thought it would work, and it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just like, I'm 0-0-0. I look over, like, the world's burning. I'm like, okay, this one's an L. That's fine. And, like, I mean, you can't expect to beat Ghost drafting like that. Like,
yep.
With the way that Ghost plays, the way they pressure buffs, we cannot expect to win games against Ghost like that. And, oh yeah, but we'll go to game two real quick for me.
Sure.
So, game two was probably the hardest I have raged in-game in months. In an SPL game, anyways. So again, like game one, we were not doing anything on the map. We were just sitting there watching as they would go from our purple buff to our blue buff, and then back to our purple buff, then back to our blue buff. And there was one time where I got dove behind my tower from Ravana, and I, like, beads to walk into my one because I misplaced it a little bit, thinking I could, like, make a play, and I could not make a play, and instantly died.
Mm-hmm.
And I just yelled at my teammates. And it was one of those rage moments that I think ended up winning us the game, because everyone was just playing scared.
Yeah.
And I think I just said something along the lines of, can we do something on the map? But, like, angrier and louder.
Yeah.
Because we were just watching their jungler and support walk across the map to anywhere they wanted and do whatever they wanted on the map. And every single game I played, they're, like, P-Cat's literally untouched.
Yep.
He can literally do whatever he wants.
I think it was game one. He played Heimdall game one, or was that game two? He played both games.
I think he played Heim game two and game three.
No, he played game one and game two. Game three.
Oh, game three was Freya. Yeah, game three was Freya.
Yeah, he played Freya. I think game one. Did he die? Did he die at all that game? No, he was 5-0, and I don't think took any significant damage whatsoever. Yep. He was really free casting in those fights, and we were talking about that watching that game, I remember.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, we cannot win games like this.
Yeah.
Like, especially in scrims when we're the ones setting the pace and we're the ones making plays and making teams respond to us and respect our plays on the map, to going to a complete 180 in SPL, watching PBM literally walk at us, full HP on any character he selects, and then us responding to what PBM's doing instead of making our own plays on the map.
Yep.
And like that just can't happen. Like I know PBM's like a big player and a big playmaker for that team, but you have to get past that mentally. You have to not be afraid to step into their jungle and make plays. And I even raged after we won game two going into game three because I basically took like the coach's standpoint and just yelled at everyone saying like, we cannot play scared in SPL. We have to make our own plays. We have to set the pace or we will continue to lose.
Right.
And then we just messed up our draft, but we still didn't play scared. And I like that. That's why I didn't care about game three, because we didn't play scared.
Right.
Well, like, we picked a losing lane and picked to like play towards solo side, but we didn't play scared of them. Mm-hmm. And that's why game one and game two were such more important games for me, because there's so much more to learn there. And we watched them back and it's just, we literally over respected them so much. Like we were even like tied in wards, but their wards were all on our side of the map and our wards were all on our side of the map.
Sure.
So we're not actually gaining any vision and gaining any intelligence because we can't make our own plays because we don't know any of their timers or know anything that's happening on the map because they just have so much pressure.
Yeah. I think a big thing, I say that on the cast literally all the time, is it's like, it is so hard to win when you are reacting to what the enemy team is doing, because they have it already planned out what they're doing and then can react to you. You have to figure out what they're doing, form your own plan, and then execute on that plan, and then react to what their reaction is on your reaction. And that's like impossible. It's, you have to be in that. And honestly, and you can speak to this better than I can, I feel like that's how old Smite was played. Like if you were the better team, I feel like you guys on Cloud9 would just take games late all the time and go, yeah, we'll just show up wherever they want to go. And then we'll just out button them. You know, we'll just like out team fight them. And then you don't have to worry about that kind of stuff. But the game has changed so much since then that I thought that was old Sore's problem back in the day, like season four, that they wanted to play that old brand of just reacting and counterpunching. And I just don't think you can do that anymore. I think there's a reason that Ghost has been really successful. And that's been that I don't think they react ever. I think they're always the one that is trying to push the pace.
And that's why I think we have such a good matchup into Ghost, because normally we're the ones setting the pace and normally we're the ones making them react. And in my opinion, if you put Ghost on the back foot, that's how you get wins against them.
Sure.
Because if they're on the front foot, they're the ones in their comfort zone. That's how they always play.
Right.
And if you're the one actually with a lead against them, that's how you win.
Yeah. I think that's a very fair analysis for sure. You want to get them off their home court, so to speak. Before we move on to our ranked topic, Sam says we're always in our comfort zone. That is true. I want to talk, because my big magnifying glass this week coming in was for Sanguine, because they had a big week with Space Station and with Radiance, two of the best teams in the league right now. And Sanguine goes 0-2, only wins one game across those two sets. What did you see from them this week that you think led them to struggle?
I think they're in between metas right now. And I think game one, they got hard taken advantage of. And
against Radiance or SSG?
Radiance.
Okay.
I think they're... And then game two, they played what they're good at. And in my opinion, if I was Sanguine's coach, they don't need to play it towards what other teams play. They just need to play what they play.
Sure.
And because they're good with their picks. And I think as the metas shift, we'll find out how good they are. Because I feel like phase one was a really good meta for what they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And now the meta shifting a little bit and changing, we get to see if they will either adapt to the meta or play their old meta. In my opinion, they should just play their old meta. Play Jing, play Ganesh, play a hyper carry mid, and let Panton play an aggressive style jungler that can make plays on the map.
Yep.
And put Yarkor on whatever he wants. but I don't know. I just think they're in a rough spot right now.
Yeah.
For whatever reason.
Yeah, I think that that's a really undervalued part, because metas take a long time to change. I don't think the general public like really gets how important that kind of stuff is. And I think that when like I put a lot of value into a team like current Space Station, because I think that they can either play multiple different types of metas or warp metas around their picks and the way that they play the map, I think that that makes a team much scarier to me overall. And I think that not only do teams get unfairly judged, both positively and negatively, based on one meta, but players do too. And like god pools and that kind of stuff. Like, I don't know. No one is ever going to say that that Shinto isn't absolutely sick nasty at mid lane. The dude is just sick with his fundamentals. But I think I don't think that like if I were making a team tomorrow for season 8 and I could see no more games from here on out, I think that I'd be hard pressed to put a whole lot more value in someone like Shinto than someone like Hurowind, who's played 1,000 different metas and has been consistently good enough to be a championship team on all of them. Whereas Shinto, I know the high end might technically be higher, but who knows what the rest of it is, right? Like, who knows what other types of metas that player can play. And I think that's just something that goes really overlooked by the community, like how vastly different players and teams can look just based on meta alone.
And also to that point, there was a guy that I saw, I can't remember if it was a Twitch chat message or like a Reddit message or something, but I remember seeing someone say, "I need to stop valuing Soul so highly, there are other picks."
How'd you take that one, Barra?
It's funny that viewers see things so one-dimensional.
Yep.
And if they think I'm the one saying, "Please God, get me Soul here, and if I don't get Soul here, I will lose the game."
Yeah, they it was the exact same way today in Obey's set, where game one they're winning and they go, "Oh, Sino picked an assassin. Looks like they're winning. Weird coincidence." And it's like, obviously that's not it, dude. Like, they could have, like, it wasn't exclusively because they had an assassin. It's not binary. It's not like the rest of the team sees a warrior and goes, "Yeah, we're not going to take pressure over on the left side now just because Sino's on a warrior." Like, that's not how this works. It's just not.
Yep. And sometimes your teammates want to get counter picks, and sometimes you'll be the guy that's like, "Don't worry, guys, I'll first pick my pick. You know, you guys want to wait, you want to hold, don't worry, I'll first pick Soul. It'll go great."
Man, never say Barra didn't do anything for his teammates, chat. That's what you should learn from this.
But viewers and fans are very one-dimensional. Like, even for last year, this will always be in my head, Sino on Cab, viewers hated that.
Yep.
And for us as a team, it was fantastic for what we needed as a team.
Pick an assassin, Sino! It's why Barra's losing! Just you're making Barra and Jeff lose by picking Kabrakan! Yep. That is what I assume they all sound like. I don't know.
And people also think like he's like out to get us by locking in Cab again or something. Like, bro, it's by far what worked for us. And I think Obey reminds me of us last year, where they try things in scrims, and then for whatever reason, whenever it comes to SPL, it does not work. And as a player, it is very frustrating.
Yep.
Because it's like, what's even the point of practice if every time we try a meta or try a strategy or think that they're going to top three these picks, so then we top three these picks and try to lead them into baiting or like baiting a pick later or like baiting their top three, and then we got exactly what we wanted, we load in, and it doesn't work. And you're just like, why?
Yeah.
And today, in Obey's set, because it's still like super fresh in my mind, their team fighting was dog.
Yep.
That was some of the worst team fights I have ever seen out of an SPL team. They were so uncoordinated, and I don't know why.
Yeah.
Like, it's so weird to watch. Like, I know how good those players are.
Yeah.
And it's so frustrating to watch them come to SPL and just play worse.
Yeah.
Like, there's no reason for why I would stay along in a 1v2 against a Freya. And there's no reason for Simon to blink in early. Like, it's just so rough.
Yeah, I don't know. Just some game day stuff, I suppose. I think Seafog put it pretty well in the chat. Seafog says, I think that picks and bans thing that we were talking about comes from understanding how picks work in rank and assuming that comp picks and bans work the same way when they are obviously very different. Also, Blitzkov says that's why you get so emotionally hurt when they lost today, because Obey reminds you of you last year.
That makes sense.
A very observant observation.
I mean, that wound is still fresh. There's no team scrimmed as much as we did last year. And yeah. That hurts. Like,
I think especially, so historically, I will say, I have been very, judgmental is too strong of a word. But I do think that historically, Smite teams have been too lax with the way that they practice. And in my, because, and it's really just based on what I liked as a player and what I would want. If I were a full-time SPL player now and I didn't have consistent scrims from like 11 a.m. until 5 p.m., I know that my own personal schedule would get really messed up, and like I wouldn't be, because that's the way I've worked since I was like 13 years old. So like I love having a very consistent work schedule that I know what I'm doing. But as I've like watched teams and talked to teams about their practice and that kind of stuff, especially like this year, phase two is so long. This phase goes into like the first week of November. We are in August. Like, I think it's actually a little bit detrimental. I think there is such a thing as over practicing and over scrimming. And if I were on a team right now, I would not be double booking, because I think you're inevitably going to burn out. And I think looking in the long term, it's just better to, I would still be, you know, practicing 5-6 days a week, or I guess like 4 days a week, games 1 to 2, and then off days the other days. But double booking, I do think, would weigh on me mentally, just knowing that it's going to go, this set, there's like, this phase is so long this time around. But every team is different, so it's kind of up to them.
Yeah, for us right now, we're only double booking 1 day out of the week.
Yeah.
And which mentally for us is a good thing, because on that day, it's more trying stuff out that day and trying new things. And then on your other days, because 3 hours is a very short block. And if you're trying out several picks that day, especially like picks that just got changed through a patch or a new strategy you want to try out, it's really hard to get an accurate representation of that, whatever you're trying out in 3 hours. So the double block helps us do that. And then the single blocks is basically full try hard, full sweat the entire time. And if someone, we're being very harsh on everyone on our team for this split, because we are very, very hungry for wins. And if anyone's sleeping late, or if we feel like anyone's lax during scrims or not taking it too seriously,
good. It's a job, dude. It's a job.
Yep.
I've always felt like a lot of teams and players don't value that time as they should. So I think that's a good thing for sure. Okay, moving on to our main topic, though. At this point, it's a secondary topic. I get asked this all the time, Bear. I'm sure you do as well. On what gods people should be playing in each role, how they should be climbing and ranked. And so I think that if we just go role by role, recommend some gods and some general strategies on what we think wins you games in ranked, hopefully that'll help some people climb up. So let's start with ADC. Let's go bottom to top in terms of roles you should play if you want to climb by yourself in ranked. Let's assume this is all solo queue. Okay, I think ADC is the worst one to play. Do you agree?
I would say support.
Really?
Wait, for noobs and viewers? Sorry, chat.
Yeah, I don't know why you said the same thing twice. And let's assume you're like a gold player trying to get to like diamond or plat or like high plat. Let's frame it that way.
I would say support.
Bro, you are trolling. Support is number two, only to jungle. Only to jungle.
No, bad supports don't know what to play. And well, that's
what we are here for, Barrow. We're telling them today.
It's right now.
No, we're telling them today. We're telling them today. Okay. This is the overall. Don't assume the player is bad. Just assume the player doesn't know what they should be playing. So we're giving them that information.
You're saying this person theoretically is a star, diamond in the rough.
Sure.
And they play really well. And they're actually the one stuck in Elo hell.
I'm saying that if you think that you are a good enough player to climb, you think you are below where you should be in Elo,
which everyone does,
then if you just play enough games in these roles and play well, I think you will move up. If you're playing the way that I think is the best way to climb in ranked.
Nah, I still think support.
All right, fair enough.
I think if you're at gold, you don't know how to play and you don't know how to carry a support. I think support's a really hard role, but a role good players will abuse.
Yes.
So if you're a good player as support, you are the secondary jungler running around the map, impacting every lane and making sure your laners are ahead, as well as feeling good about the game, which means like, you're putting out pressure, you're putting out wards, you're making plays, you're setting up plays for your team, and you're not being the support that's, I'm Kepri, I plucked this guy, why did I die?
Why are you playing Kepri? That's what the list is here for, Barrow. We'll start with support then, okay? Here's what I think you should be picking as support.
Why are you attacking me?
Like every game. No, I'm just, it's a springboard, you know, you're motivating me right here. You're perfect. Okay. This is exactly what I wanted to hear, okay?
All right. You're bouncing.
Here's some of the best support gods that I think you should play in order to carry. Because I agree, if you're picking Geb, you are asking to lose. You're asking for it, okay? And this is going to be the overall big thing that is going to transcend all roles. Pick pressure. In Smite, pressure is so broken. It's so broken, okay? Learn how to play Hercules. Pick it every game in support. I'm not kidding. Even if you are not going to be Aurora PBM, and you know what? You don't have to be, because the enemy support is picking Kumba and doing nothing, okay? Because you're going to be getting in there every fight, all right? You're picking Hercules. You're picking Ymir. You're picking gods that can run it down at all times. And if you aren't getting in there, you're doing it wrong, all right? Pick gods that pick Horus. Pick gods that are going to win the lane for you instantly without your ADC doing anything at all. And you're going to be in a much better spot as a support. And if
you know how many,
dude, I'm telling you,
you just spawned.
Good. Support is broken and it's fun, man. I love support. I love playing support. I think it's so fun. You just got to get in there. You can't be scared. Do not. Here's a good tip. Do not, under any circumstances, pick Geb, no matter how good it looks into their comp. Don't pick Kepri. Don't pick, who's the other support I was thinking of that's like super defensive?
Sylvanas?
Sylvanas is like on the edge. I don't know. Like,
I think Sylvanas bad.
I think Sylvanas kind of bad too.
I think Cab's pretty good for running down support.
Yeah, Cab can be good. Don't pick Terra. You'll never hit your two. let's just be real here. You've got to win team fights by yourself, okay? You've got to win team fights by yourself. And that's the mentality you're going in with. And there will be games you lose, even when you feel like you shouldn't, so I can play Ares. No, you didn't listen to the number one thing. You've got to win the lane by yourself. That is the most important thing you can do. You have to win your 2v2.
I would argue you can throw Naja and Mulan into
your
mix.
Yes, Naja, perfect support pick. Mulan, perfect support pick. Yes, Low-Res Studios, hate the name. Do not ever pick Athena, ever. Because Athena can never win a game by herself because you need your team to hit stuff off your taunt. Why are you playing that? You got to do it. You got to do it yourself. Ratatosker support, I'm in. I'm signing up for that. That's the kind of stuff I want to see, Glitch. That's what I want to see. So if you're playing support, pick pressure, get good at timers. That's important. Ama support's a good idea. Ganesh, maybe. Hachi support only if you're Neil Ma.
Ganesh, you have to be good at Ganesh.
You have to be good at Ganesh. But if you are good with Ganesh, I do think he can hard carry games for sure. But that's the big thing.
The next one on the totem pole?
So I think support's number two, the second easiest role to carry from. Because, and here's why though, Bera. If I'm picking Hercules support, and the enemy support, who's about the same level as me, like in terms of skill, is picking Kepri, how do I ever not snowball the game on that guy? Like, the support diff is going to be huge, right? That's what I'm talking about. Like, you can support diff really easily and win games off of it.
I'm just going to say you're looking at it through, like, rose-tinted whatever glasses.
Maybe.
Whatever.
Maybe you're right. Supports. Oh, Sobek. Pick Sobek. That god is OP.
Do not pick Sobek.
Sobek is so OP.
Giant bait.
Sobek is so OP. All right. So
giant bait.
Oh, but hit your plucks or else.
Oh, dude, people will pluck and then kill your teammates. There's a very hard, like, mental gap you have to have. So after you pass that gap, you're good at Sobek. But before that gap, you do not know when to pluck. You do not know when to tail up. You do not know when to ult. And you're just literally pressing your buttons in teamfights because they're up.
They're always up, and they all do a million damage, and they solo me as a mid laner. So pick Sobek. That's all I have to say, okay?
Bad god.
I think the best role to carry from is obviously jungle, right?
Jungle, easy.
100%. Easy. Junglers easy. Are so broken. And here's the other thing. This is, okay, Barry, you might want to close your ears. Junglers, gank duo level 2. Every game. It is free elo. Mm-hmm. Free elo. Pick Ratatosker. Pick Erlong Shen. Don't pick Set. You're not going to do, like, that's not it, okay? We're getting in there as gods that can gank duo early or level 2 gank solo and cheese them because you'll tilt them. Pele is a good pick. Like, just gank early and then hard farm and then just capitalize. That's it. Like,
I assume
that's all
Ao Kuang is still good at the lower levels.
Ao Kuang is
where you can just run it down. Phantos is only good if you can hit your ones consistently.
Robin's a perfect one. Robin is perfect.
There's so many bad Robins, bro. Even at the top level, you'll just see, like, boop, and then miss.
Yeah, well, listen, that kid has enough damage with that you don't even need to hit the ult. That's what's so nuts about
That's
it.
That's true. I think Arachne, any, like, Golden Blade abused jungler is good right now.
Yes, and you just pick Baka, dude.
Yeah, pick two or three Golden Blade abusers that you're good with and just run it down. Arachne, Baka... I don't know if it's good on Kali, but I've seen it a decent amount on Kali. Don't know if it's actually good. And then if you want a magical Ao or Hebo, in my opinion.
Yeah, I do think Kali is too late game, as Flint Steel asks. You want something that's good enough early. Mercury is like the line for me where he's good enough early to warrant picking, but still not very good overall.
Dude, noobs cannot merc gank duo, though.
They can't.
They will just dash into a whole wave.
They sure will.
And think that it's a kill. And I'm like...
I think Nem is good, but kind of hard to do perfectly. Here's the other big jungle tip that I have for you. Understand when lanes are lost. If your ADC is, like, three levels down, if you go over there, you're just going to get double killed. So don't do that. That's a tilt. Go ahead.
Number one across the board, don't be afraid to mute idiots.
Oh, yes, yes. Just
100%.
Just mute them. It'll make your life so much better. So
it's
much better.
It's not worth hearing their VGS spam. Help, help, help. Gank right lane, gank right lane. Just mute. Yep. Like, if you're a person that gets easily tilted, just mute.
Yep.
Because also, don't type. Typing will literally just make the situation worse. No one has ever been like, man, I had a great conversation in Smite today. No one has ever said that. Or in any MOBA. Or in any competitive game.
Yep.
Like,
completely agree.
Just don't do it.
You will not change them. They will not change you. So unbind the enter key if you have to. The other one. As a jungler, as you get into the like mid game, just pick the person who's doing the most on their team and kill them. Don't worry about anybody else. Like, if they're, because that's how ranked usually is. It's usually four people on each team that are like around the same. And then one person who's doing really well on both teams. Just focus that person, because you're an assassin and that's what your job is. So just kill them. If it's like a support or a solo laner that's ruining you guys, that's a little bit more awkward. But if it's like a solo laner and you're playing them, just start ulting the solo laner instead of ulting their backline. If their backline's not doing anything, just remember that. But target identification as a jungler is very important.
And also, don't be afraid to pull a Chariot and just play on solo side and just invade the enemy back camps. If you have a stronger 1v1, keep invading those back camps. Keep holding W, get those timers, ward their red, ward their back camps on solo side, and just pick which side you want to go for on each spawn. Yep. And literally just hold W at whichever one. Tell your team, I'm going to be here, and that's all you got to do.
There you go. Okay, mid lane. Because I think mid is the third best role to carry from right now, behind jungle and support, in my mind, even though Barrett disagrees. here's my number one pet peeve that I see ranked jungler or ranked mid laners make, and it does sometimes work, but that does not mean it's the correct play. If you and your jungler are going to clear red, and your jungler decides, I'm going to go gank duo after this red, which, as we've covered, is a good plan for them, do not follow them. Do not ever level 2 or level 3 gank duo as a mid laner, because if their mid laner is smart and they just shove your wave and go to your back camps and take those and then come back and shove the next wave, you are so far behind. All you have to do as a mid laner, as soon as they go to their red, enemy missing middle, be careful left, a couple pings on them so they're paying attention, and then go shove your wave. Do not miss waves as a mid laner.
Don't left click ping for enemy missings. Always right click.
Yep.
It's left click. I would sleep through that. Like, please don't left click ping for missing calls. It's so annoying. Always right click. Always just ping my ears.
Yes.
Let me know.
This is another general tip that I really like. If you see someone on a ward, which I assume you're looking at your mini map all the time, because that's what you should be doing as a good player, and you see someone rotating to a fight, do the, I don't even do be careful left or enemy incoming or anything like that. I just right click ping where they are in the direct line to that lane.
Yep.
I just ping the whole line. And then that way they know exactly where they're coming from, and that'll get their attention way more than be careful left or anything like that. So that is a big one for me. But the big thing for me, as a mid laner, don't miss waves, because there's a lot of farm in mid right now. And if you get every wave, you will be in a great position to carry. And also build to hit the front line and just kill the front line every fight. And you'll win.
Is that flat pin sword river build still meta for most mids?
Yeah, I think it's good. Dude, I've been experimenting with Book of Thoth and those types of builds, and they feel really good. Like, Book of Thoth is so cheap. Either Book 2 start or Mages Book 1 has felt pretty good. I think that...
Into boots or...
Yeah, into boots, into a flat pen option, into Soul Reaver. And then, dude, all these auto-attacking assassins, you finish that build with a Book of the Dead, and they literally can never kill you as long as your proc is up, because you just get like 800 health shields. It's insane.
Yeah.
Like, it, I feel like that build is really good and no one's buying it at all. I don't understand.
I think it's hard right now to buy an SPL. I don't know if it's...
It's a little slow. But dude, it is like, it's 1150 from book 2 to finish Thoth. That's it.
Yeah. I feel like you'd probably do it against like a scaling team. Like against like Sanguine Radiance or SSG. You'd probably get away with one of those builds.
Yeah.
And but against an early game team, you probably get punished pretty hard for that. Yeah. I would imagine. Anyway.
That's fair. All right, we got to keep it moving because we're running out of time. We're already kind of over. Yeah. Okay, picks in mid lane to go with. If you think you are better than the enemy mid laner, you think you're in a low, like too low of elo of a game, I think the best god to solo enemy mid laners with is Agni by far. You get to punish worse players with Agni better than anybody in the game, because you just always have buttons up and they all do a lot of damage. And you're pretty safe. So I think Agni's a great low elo pick if you think you're better than them. Hera is another one if you think you're better than the enemy mid laner that lets you get actual solo kill potential. But I'm not... Scylla's okay. I think she's a little bit too late game. I think do not pick Merlin. just don't pick him. You're not going to do enough, I don't think. Like, if I'm talking gold trying to get to plat or plat trying to get to diamond, gods like Agni are going to be your bread and butter. I think Hera's perfect. I got to pull up the
mid laners. I was going to say Raijin.
Raijin is perfect. Yep, that's a great one. Isis is too bad. Yeah, Neith. Having a hunter in mid is going to be important that you have in the god pool. So play at least one. Neith is probably the best one. Uller is really good, but harder mechanically, of course. Discordia is pretty good.
Yeah, Hebo as well. That's the four.
Also,
that's all you need.
Learn to abuse Morrigan, okay? Morrigan is literally abuse. Like, we're talking Golden Blade abuse, Hecate abuse, and Morrigan abuse. Morrigan is OP, and she is not that hard, okay? It is not that hard. All you do is you stun some... All right. You stand somewhere where you don't think they'll have a ward. You press three. You press one instantly. Don't wait until you're right next to them. Press one, because it'll just prime it. And then you just mosey on through the team fight, slam a backliner, auto two, insta-transform, and you're good. Like, that god's OP. Play that god, for sure.
We gotta move on, but here's my Morrigan guide.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, that was I was impersonating you.
Oh, well, was it good?
It was great.
Thank you.
That was really great advice.
Solo lane, what do you think is the best way to climb as a solo laner? Because I think this one's hard.
I think solo is OP, and I think every solo laner is a crybaby poopy pants that doesn't want to do anything.
That was a very MLC stealth sentence from you.
Thank you. But I feel like solo laners are OP, and everyone just sucks at solo because the solo laners that I play against, like Alma,
yep,
Kakulin,
yep,
any god that can rotate fast around the map and steal back camps, proxy waves, rotate mid, abuse the mid laner, proxy the next wave, steal back camps, maybe steal a speed buff on the way, and then find their way to the duo lane at 12 minutes in and kill me. Okay, your lane is OP. Also, you can buy thorns easily in that role, which makes it 10 times better than any other role in the game. And every solo laner is just a crybaby.
Sure. Yeah, I can get on board with most of that. Good picks over there in solo lane. Do not pick like Yorm. Like, you're just not going to win. If you win, it won't be because of what you did necessarily. And that is, it's so, the pro game is so different. Pick, Ama is a great pick. Whatever warrior you're most comfortable with winning lane, I don't care if Bellona isn't thought of as very good. If you feel like you win lane every game as Bellona, pick her. That's fine.
I would say Ama, right now, in my opinion, the hyper carry solo laners are Ama, Kakulin, Wukong, and Vamana.
Yeah, all those are great.
And they all have different builds, some solo leader, some not solo leader, some attack speed, some whatever else you want. Find a build that works. And or copy, paste a solo laner's build, whatever they're building in this meta right now, and just run it down. Also, I feel like Mulan is up there, but yep. I feel like Mulan's kind of hard because some people are just like, herder, let me ult here and die. So don't do that.
That can be
always ult intelligently as Mulan. It's not that hard.
Yep. Here's a hint. If you blink behind the enemy team and then ult towards your team as Mulan, that ult gets real good real fast, because then you don't get punished and it's just a giant root into knockup, which is turns out pretty good. Learn how to proxy waves efficiently. If you see their jungler and left, you know you're safe. Mid laner can rotate, but you know, get timers on enemy back camps and blue buffs. Don't be afraid to ping your jungler for help on the blue buff, but also don't be afraid to give it up if they can't come to that. And here's the big thing. If you are ahead in solo, there is something magical about finishing your third item and then insta-rotating. That third item power spike in solo lane is so nuts because you build these really cheap things that are really efficient, and then you have these warrior base stats. As soon as you finish your third item, look to rotate, because for whatever reason, that feels like a super sweet spot all the time, as long as you aren't super far behind.
And in my opinion, ward their backs on that little entryway if you can.
Yeah.
And if you can get the back camp in there as well as the crossway from mid where their mid harpies are on your side on that little entry point. So you have two aggressive wards, one at their back camps, one at their little entryway. get a timer on their blue buff, a timer on their back camps, timer on the mid camps, and start proxying. If you're just better than the enemy solo, don't worry about killing him. Just worry about out-rotating him and impacting the rest of the game.
Yep.
It's way better. Much more. It's way better to impact four people's games than just one person's game. And if you're better than him, you'll carry the fights.
100%. Team fighting as a solo laner is dope, and you should do it more. Last but, in this case, I think, least, ADC. Listen, I think ADC, because if you have a bad support, they can throw your lane for you, and then you are so far behind, it is difficult to come back from. But team fighting is where you really get the most of your money, and so I'll leave you with the god recommendations and everything, because I avoid this role like the plague when I can.
I always recommend Hachi for some reason. I feel like Hachi is kind of like old Chiron, where he kind of just does everything that a good hunter can do. You can be aggressive with Hachi, you can be defensive with Hachi, and he has good poke, he has a good fight, he has a good disengage, he has a good engage. So you can kind of play him anyway. I feel like Haim is a little too hard. I wouldn't worry about learning Haim unless you just love learning and want to spend like a good few weeks learning that god. Uller is really good if you're good at Uller, but I wouldn't worry about him. Honestly, it's going to sound troll, but Artemis and Hachi, I think, are your best picks.
Agreed. Because those are picks that snowball lanes really well. Like, if you get ahead, it is really hard to live against them.
And Hecate abusers. Just pick one. Yep. Whatever you're good at, magical DC-wise, just pick one and just keep playing it.
Yep. Literally have one right now. And, just learn a few hunters. Make sure you have some magical hunters in the back pocket. And, and just do what you can in ADC. Hold on. Hold on.
That's the advice. Your whole goal as an ADC and low tier ranked, in my opinion, is securing your purple buff and playing safe. If you over aggress, you need to know where the enemy jungler is. And if you don't, just don't go for it. And it's just not worth the risk, because if you die there, you're going to look like EU9's duo lane, and you're going to get behind, and you're going to not feel great about it. And you're just going to be there and be like, I'm behind, this sucks, there's nothing I can do, I'm an aggressive pick, and now I can't be aggressive anymore. Just worry about farming, take your good fights where you can, and if it's not a good fight, don't worry about it. Just back off. Yeah. Also, there's two identities, in my opinion, to ADC. You can either be the rundown ADC, you can pick on her, you can pick Medusa, you can pick Uller, hold W. If you want to be more team fighting ADC, you can go Hachi, you can go Artemis, you can go Chernabog. All three of those, in my opinion, are good at ranked for just team fighting and just farming. So pick your style, stick with that style, and run it down or play safe for team fights. And your whole objective for playing safe is securing your purples, doing your alphas on spawn, pinging golds if the enemy dual aim backs at a bad time. And your whole objective as an aggressive ADC is to wait to see their jungler on the map and then go for a play. Or if you just want to force like a 1v2, if you do see their jungler on your side of the map, just fight. Just show that you're better than the two people coming over and just fight them. And that's how Zapman became Zapman. Just all you have to do is fight.
Channel your inner Zapman. A lot of questions in chat about how often you should rotate as a carry.
Only rotate if you're going to guarantee get one kill. And this is advice for climbing.
Yes. Not,
if you're already a high level player, don't worry about it.
And
if you're just a bad player, that's the advice to you. Don't rotate unless you're guaranteed going to get a kill for yourself. And that's how you should be looking at every single rotation. If you're going to late rotate and you're just going to sit under your mid tier 1 or tier 2 tower and kill a wave and share it three ways, don't rotate. Go back to duo lane, go farm over there. It's way more farm, and just play selfishly. Like, that's my number one tip. Just play selfishly. Don't play for your team. Play selfishly. And that doesn't mean never rotate. That just means rotate when it's good for you. Don't care about your teammates. Because when you start caring about your teammates as an ADC, you're going to put yourself in bad spots. You're going to try to like sacrifice yourself and play like a non-ADC role. Play selfishly.
Yep. Absolutely. You're the late game hyper carry. Play selfishly. I think that's the right mentality. All right. That's going to do it for us here this week on the Backliners podcast. If you are listening, please give us a rating. If you're watching on Twitch, then make sure you also give us a rating on either Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Make sure you guys check out all the stuff on the Prediction Esports page. They've got a lot of different podcasts on a whole bunch of different different esports, which is really awesome. Next week, Barra, I was thinking maybe we do like a little AMA episode or something like that. Oh yeah, that's fine.
I'm sorry.
Maybe we do
for
us as a show. Like, oh, we let people know to come tune in live, and maybe we'll try and pre-gather some questions ahead of time. So I think that's what we're going to do next week. So if you're listening, try and make sure you tune in 8 PM twitch.tv/prediction esports. Of course, you can follow all that either at twitter.com/aggro or twitter.com/barracuda doubles underscore. On all the consonants with an underscore at the end. That's how we do it around here. So
yeah.
Get your questions ready. I think that'll be a fun episode. And we'll see. Random question. Okay, we're already way over time. So, Barra, what is your favorite color?
Blue.
What shade? Come on now. You know I'm a stickler for specifics.
What shade?
What do you mean? Blue. There's a billion. Navy blue, robin's egg, turquoise. There's a billion different ones.
Blue.
Okay. Blue.
I don't know what a shade of blue is called.
Okay. Well, my favorite color is green. There you go.
What shade?
I don't have a specific shade for you. All right. If we're going to play your game.
What? You're harping on me, but you don't even have a shade of green?
I like darker green. Not super light, like neon green. But you know,
like a nice forest.
Yeah, like a nice forest green. Yeah.
Oh, that's actually a color. Holy. Oh, yeah. Genius. I like light blue, kind of a mix. Kind of like the color of the Twitter icon.
Okay.
It's like sky blue or baby blue.
Yeah,
something like that.
Sky blue, for sure. A very popular pick there, Barra. And you know what? No one could blame you. No one could blame you for sure. All right, chat. That's it for us. Thanks for listening / watching. And we'll see you next week for an AMA. So if you... Oh, yeah. If you aren't going to be there... feel free to send us a tweet. Just use the hashtag the backliners like I use on all of our tweets. And then that way I can easily find them for next week. So if you can't be here, use hashtag the backliners. And that way I'll definitely see it for sure. Okay. Thanks for watching. Bye.
Bye.